Hey, welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and it's New Year's Eve.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. Happy New Year's Eve, everyone. What a year, Maria.
Oye, man, what a year. God, I'm so glad that I had ITT to carry me through this year. Seriously, I don't know what I would have done without it. So thank you, Julio, for being my partner and to our whole production team, because you guys made this year a lot easier to understand. So we're going to take this moment to reflect back on 2019 before the 2020 shit show gets real. All right. One of the things that we thought about when we were talking about our year as a staff is, and we hope that you guys have been able to take part in this, because our live shows are just so wonderful because we get a chance to meet you guys, our audience, because you really are our ITT familia.
Yeah. You know, we were looking back at the year, Maria. We did 8 live shows. I was like, holy shit. We did 8 live shows. We did one in New York City. We also were in Cambridge. But, you know, I think my favorite memories of the live shows was when we went to Mission in McAllen, Texas, into the Rio Grande Valley, and we did 2 live shows from the RGV.
Yeah, hello. Can we just shout out the dragtivist Beatrix Lestrange? It's actually Queen Beatrix Lestrange. And she was in full drag talking about her activism.
I can totally own up to this. I was very anti-Valley. I was like, oh my God, there's nothing here for me. But I'm that millennial generation. So I totally saw a lot of the stuff that like wasn't happening. And I left to Austin and I was there for 3 years, which is where I first started doing drag. And then because Austin's being gentrified and I couldn't live there anymore, I moved back down to the Valley.
But Austin was where you first did drag?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it gave you that.
Yeah. So it gave me that platform. I mean, it gave me that opportunity to believe in myself and to be creative, and which were things I didn't think I could have here in the Valley. But then when I came back, I realized that in order for the Valley to grow, I needed to be participatory in the changes and make spaces for people like me and create events for people in my community. So really, the Valley is a blank canvas. And right now, there are a lot of people within the Valley that are trying to paint a very beautiful picture as opposed to what's being projected onto us.
Yeah. I'll say, please applaud that. Wow.
And we had our former senior producer, Juan Pablo Garnum, who's now at the Texas Tribune, and our fabulous producer, Nicole Rothwell. And we taught a podcasting workshop. I got to wear a Mexico soccer jersey. Remember that? My wife still makes fun of me to this day, and my kids make fun of me. I was like, why'd you wear that? You know, because I was like, this is what you're supposed to do on the RGV. We had Derek Garcia, we had Efren, and Beatrix, we had Cristina.
Hello, Cristina Sinsun, who's like running for senator in the state of Texas.
The image that people have of Texas is not actually who Texas is, because when you look around at the state, it doesn't look like us. It doesn't look like us in the stories that get told about Texas. It doesn't look like us in who represents our state. And it definitely doesn't look like us or what our community's needs are and the issues that get addressed. The truth is, as Latinos in the state, that we're treated like second-class people. We make up 40% of the population. We are the most likely to be poor, the most likely to die on the job, the least likely to graduate high school, the most likely to not have health care. These are all statistics that our community faces in a state where we should actually have really polar opposite outcomes. But I think the only way you change that is by organizing and using the power of numbers in our community. And to me, the really thing that's also positive is that Latinos are extremely young. By our next governor's race, not only will Latinos be the ethnic majority, but 1 in 3 eligible voters is going to be under the age of 30. It's the most diverse, progressive population that can really change the politics of Texas.
And then we had, of course, the breakfast tacos.
At the gas station.
Where it was like the bing, bing, bing of the door. God, that sound. What is it?
We are in a gas station in Mission, Texas. And that's people coming in and out to get their gas and to also, ready for this, Maria, to get their
breakfast tacos.
Breakfast tacos. Some of the best breakfast tacos I've ever had.
The best breakfast tacos.
We love Texas. We loved that show. All those people in Texas. I want to go back.
We love you, Texas. You know, we had also this really beautiful experience very far from Texas at Eastern Connecticut State University. It was probably our largest audience turnout yet.
Yeah.
Most of the audience were a lot of undocumented students that are actually encouraged to come to Eastern Connecticut State University because that's where you can get in-state tuition.
Yep.
If you're undocumented. I just love this kind of community. The concert hall itself was like gorgeous.
Oh, man, what a venue.
But the energy, man, it was just like, yes. Get all these young people listening to us and their professors, too. it was fabulous.
And so several of the undocumented students, we just met them, they are not from Connecticut. But because right. Connecticut offers in-state tuition, it becomes, especially here, ECSU becomes a place that is welcoming.
Right.
I mean, I just met a couple of Latinas. You're like, I'm from Wisconsin. I'm from Georgia. What am I doing here in Connecticut? And it's like, okay. But Connecticut is going to get the love of these young people.
Yes.
And it's Georgia's loss and Wisconsin's loss, frankly. It's their loss. Yeah. Right?
And then there was this like really special moment. So we were talking about youth-led movements fighting against gun violence and hate and discrimination. And it was at DePaul, which it was, you know, my last year teaching at DePaul University in Chicago. Shout out DePaul. We love you. And so we had Isabella Gomez, who stars in One Day at a Time, on stage.
Yeah.
And then we brought one of, you know, America's heroes, in my view, Edna Chavez. She's an anti-gun violence organizer from L.A.
Yeah.
You know of her because she took part in the March for Our Lives and she shouted out her brother. She is so fabulous. And we had this beautiful moment with Edna Chavez and Isabella Gomez.
Yeah, and what a moment when Edna started talking about her story.
So it was a very, very hard, very emotional process because I never said Ricardo after his death. And that was over 12 years ago. I never even spoke about him just because when he passed away, everything kind of just died off with him. But like, you know, being a young girl and like witnessing his own death, it was pretty hard on me because it was just like, why should we forget somebody who was like a role model to me? Even though he was like a fucking machista and all this other stuff and would raise me like a little boy.
But it's complicated.
But at the same time, you know, he's the one that made me the person I am today. When I was composing the speech, it was very hard just because I didn't really want to mention Ricardo because it was still so heavy on my heart and still is, but not so much where it's just like I'll break down immediately just thinking about him. Like now it's just more so I'm at peace with myself. My family is at peace because now we know that everybody that heard that speech knows his story, knows his name, and chanted out his name.
I mean, she's fabulous. And Isabella Gomez as well. So those were the live shows. But then there was another big takeaway for us in 2019. Because, you know, part of what In the Thick is, Maria, you know, you say, like, I need it in the thick. And I need In the Thick, too, because of the news cycle. And it's the only place, I know you write and you make your appearances and I write my columns and I do my tweets and, you know, we report on things. But it's the only place where we, because we're news junkies, like get together, start talking about, you know, from the impeachment to the 2020 election, but also, you know, whiteness in crisis, anti-immigrant roots in the country, detriments of capitalism, Me Too movements from Mexico to the United States. We had all these really deep conversations. So, for example, the issue of white supremacy in our conversation that we had with Alex Stern.
Because we've been covering this for a hella long time now.
And I just want to say Alex was great, but she completely ruined the Matrix for me.
After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
And you, in the book, write that this scene has become a symbol for alt-right conversion.
Whoa.
So I'm kind of reading this and I'm like, whoa. Because I'm kind of like, I love the Matrix. Did not see this coming.
Uh-oh.
That's probably a good sign for me because I don't hang out in the alt-right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm kind of glad I don't know about this. But Alex, can you explain that movie scene? And what do you mean by that? And should I be hating on The Matrix now?
No, no. I mean, sorry to, you know, kind of disrupt your, you know, your movie fandom. What I wanted to do was to trace, well, where does that term actually come from?
Okay.
And why did it become a captivating metaphor for the alt-right or white nationalists? I think a variety of different communities have used, you know, the idea of red pilling or conversion, the idea of waking up to, you know, the reality around us and, you know, seeing what actually, you know, is real and true and becoming deprogrammed is kind of the idea.
Yeah, okay.
But I think one of the reasons why it resonated so much for the alt-right is that it is presenting a really stark choice between the unabridged truth of the lie that's been sold to kind of white cisgendered men of the American dream and diversity is awesome and all those kinds of things. And to reject that and say, you know, no, that's, you know, the blue pill that they've been trying to feed us. The red pill is the pill that we need to take to wake up. So those are some of the ideas. I don't think that means that we still can't enjoy the film The Matrix.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm a big sci-fi fan myself.
That makes me feel better. I just want to say,
oh,
because
good.
I was, when I read your book, I was like, I was crushed.
I'm sorry.
Because I felt like, so, no, it's okay. But I also love your point.
Oh my God, I feel so bad.
I also
bad.
Love your point. And then, this was such a special show. Remember when we had Bob Moore?
Yes.
A couple of days after El Paso, after the massacre.
Yeah.
The anti, you know, Mexican, anti-Latino, anti-immigrant massacre. Terrorist attack, which I always say domestic terrorist attack in El Paso.
I'm glad you mentioned the bicultural nature of our community. I would also add it's a binational community because you can't separate El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. There's a river that runs between us. I prefer to think that the border joins us rather than divides us.
Hmm.
At least seven of the people who were murdered were from Mexico. They had come on a Saturday morning to shop. Mexican shoppers are a huge part of the economy of El Paso, and they're our neighbors just as much as El Pasoans are. So we grieve their loss. We've had a number of families in El Paso touched by this. We know at least one child was orphaned because his parents were murdered.
Oh my God.
As his mother held him.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Bob.
Oh my God.
The mother used her body to shield the baby and lost her life. And then a few hours later, they found out that the father had also perished in this attack. We know that at least one little boy died for no other reason than the color of his skin.
Jesus.
This is just unimaginable. And, you know, I think we've become numb to mass shootings in this country, tragically. This is a different form, though.
Yeah.
This was a person who drove 10 hours to come to this beautiful community so that he could murder people because of their nationality, because of who their parents are. This is just beyond sickening, and I wish I could say I was surprised by it.
Yeah.
But the truth is, El Paso has literally had a bullseye placed on it for the last 2 years by this administration, and we can't feign surprise.
Correct.
That when the president talks about an invasion.
You know, the thing that we've also done a bit of in the thick, it's like we're keeping you up to date with the news that's happening, right? So you can understand and also laugh a little bit and understand what's happening in this crazy, crazy moment. But also, we've been doing like a lot of shows about the history of immigration in this country.
Yeah.
Which is something that I've been, well, let's just say spending a lot of time thinking and writing about.
Right.
Soon to be announced something, ... But I really love the interview with Professor Bill Ong Hing. You know, I didn't really have it present in my mind.
Carter's role in terms of turning away Haitians. So what's that part of the story, Bill?
Absolutely. So Jimmy Carter was looking at Cuba at the time, and he, you know, he gave us a similar speech about open arms, that kind of thing. And he was directing his comments to Cubans. And as we know, Fidel actually allowed in some people who had been convicted of crimes, some people from mental institutions.
Right.
And that part of the story is often told, but turning away Haitians is usually blamed on Ronald Reagan, which he deserves a lot of blame for. But it started with Jimmy Carter. I mean, Jimmy Carter was caught by surprise when the people were fleeing Baby Doc from Haiti, and he didn't realize. I mean, I'm telling you, he didn't know. I'm surprised that his State Department didn't warn him. But they started coming because they were fleeing the oppression of Baby Doc, and he didn't know what to do. And he started saying, yeah, they're not legitimate refugees, right? They're just leaving because they're poor, not understanding the nuance of what he was saying. And yeah, he unfortunately is chapter one of anti-Haitian refugees.
I love the fact that, and by the way, we learned too, right? Julio and I learned, like from Professor Bill Ong-Hing, we learned too. And one of the things that we didn't know when we created the show that was going to be so important was going to be joy and laughter. And you guys know that, I mean, we laugh. Julio and I, we just are, we're very slapsticky.
We get the laughs. People review us on the laughs alone, Maria.
Oh, yeah, adorable. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's kind of cute.
But we do that because, actually, journalists spend a lot of time laughing and telling jokes because we are often covering things that are really quite horrible. But also with my friendship with Julio, it is a lot about laughing and just poking fun because we're like brother and sister. And then we also, I really think we center joy.
Yes.
And the things that really make us joyful.
Right. And we had some really funny moments. I'm sorry. I'm going to be really honest. Like, In the Thick is a funny ass show sometimes, all the time. We had these amazing comedians. First of all, Sharla Lauriston.
So good, Sharla.
And then my favorite Libyan stand-up comedian in the world, Mohanad El Sheikhi.
Mohanad.
The worst thing, which is not political at all or about living here in the States, is one thing that we use in Libya is like what they call, I don't know how to really pronounce it, but bidet, is that how it's pronounced? Or bidet or whatever?
Bidet. The bidet.
Wait a minute. The worst thing about the United States.
Wait, you're going to say that the worst.
And that's the worst
is
thing
that
for
there
me.
Is no bidet?
Yes. Like, honestly, that is the worst part about living in the States. I'm like, that the bathrooms lack that.
There's no bidet, and that's the worst part of the
That is the worst part for me. Yes.
I don't even want to go there.
Wow.
I'm so freaked out by that that I don't even want to go there. So,
first of all, I don't know about you, Maria. Ever since we had Mohanad on, I love his Twitter feed. I laugh at my laptop when I read his Twitter feed. So seriously, guys, follow Mohanad.
Mohanad just gives me so much hope.
Oh, he does.
He just gives me so much hope. And I wish he had his own late night show. Then we could go on.
We would be his guests. We'd be like, hey, In the Thick with Mohanad. But we also had, not only we had comedians, we also had hilariously funny guests like Mona El Tahawi.
I came up with the trifecta of misogyny to explain to my comrades, basically men mostly, in the Middle East and North Africa, about what we have to fight in order for the revolution to succeed. Because as, you know, as we know, I'm Egyptian and Egypt had a revolution in 2011. And just before Egypt was inspired by Tunisia, which started its revolution in 2010. And many countries across that part of the world had revolutions, which when we look at now, basically stumbling if they haven't failed outright. So my contention is they're stumbling and failing because it's basically a group of men fighting other men. It's basically a dick swinging match for, you know, just to kind of make it really graphic.
Okay.
And not to be like, you know, transphobic about it, but I'm talking specifically about cis het men, you know?
No, I think you have to be that. Yeah.
Politics everywhere.
You know, one of the reasons why In the Thick is so much fun is because obviously, dear listener, you know this is happening, but our audience is growing, right? Because people hear us.
Yes.
And they're just like, whoa, what the heck? What is going on? What?
Who are these guys?
And, you know, Julio and I, we do get to sit behind the microphone. Like right now, I'm sitting here with Walter the dog in my lap, in my studio. You're in Boston.
Yeah.
We get to be the front of it. But really, we couldn't do this, and we say it all the time, without our team.
Right.
So a couple of shout outs, because, you know, this year, our senior producer, Juan Pablo Garnham, from Chile, moved on. You know, he left this all and moved to Dallas, Texas, to work for the Texas Tribune.
Wow.
It was bittersweet, but thank you, Juan Pablo Garnham, for all of the work that you did with us.
Yeah, and our guest co-host, all-star Jamila King, who has stepped in like the pro that she is when our schedules don't allow us to record. I mean, Jamila is family. Follow her on the Mother Jones podcast. Please, guys, not only listen to us, but please support Jamila as well. She's fantastic.
And, you know, she knows everything that I don't know about everything that involves a ball, a football, a baseball, a basketball.
That's why I love her. The National Basketball Association, all of a sudden, because of China, they're so worried about losing money. Are you kidding me?
I totally agree with you. I think that this is super hypocritical on the part of the NBA. You know, it's ironic, though, that this happened now when it's the NBA preseason. So there are teams, actually, like LeBron James and the Lakers just played a game in China against, I think, the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
And the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, is actually in China as all of this is breaking.
Apologizing. Adam Silver's apology tour is happening probably as we speak.
Right, right. And it's just, you know, it's a real test. It's a real test. I think the bar is low in America for political stances. You know, the NBA is far ahead of the NFL, and the NFL still has this very, like, slavery mentality.
We love you, Jamila. Thank you for agreeing to be a part of the ITT familia. Also, something that makes me so happy is the work from Noor Saudi, who was our 2019 New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow. This is a fellowship from the New York Women's Foundation that I had actually been dreaming about,
yep,
working towards for years. And so this is why I wanted the New York Women's Foundation to create a fellowship for young women journalists in New York City, predominantly women of color, because someone like Noor joins us and then she produces, you know, these really beautiful episodes from the roundtable, you know, about being Black and Muslim and a woman in the United States, to the Pride episode celebrating 50 years since the Stonewall Uprising.
I mean, in general, I would say the state has never been there for trans people. The state has never been there for people of color or low-income people. I definitely protested a lot under Barack Obama's administration. There were still people being killed and there was still violence happening. However, I mean, you know, like as soon as the Trump administration came into office, felt like every Friday there was an announcement very strategically, you know, whether about immigrant rights or LGBT people or women, Muslims, like across identities, you know, you just keep having to figure out what to do. I mean, there were just countless attacks on the trans community, specifically from his administration. I mean, but to have announcements about the trans military ban and about the protections for young people rolled back and bathroom laws and, I mean, most recently, like our healthcare rights and the shelter system, like literally every aspect of people's lives and definitely trans people's lives feeling like a threat.
I also had the pleasure of co-hosting with Noor on In the Thick. I'm so happy Noor's part of this team because she just fit right in. And the fact that she is now officially part of Futuro Media, now an ITT associate producer. This is what Futuro's all about. We love our little ITT team for sure.
But it is about family here. So thank you so much for being a part of our family as a listener. When we ask you to tell people to listen, it's because we think that if you're enjoying this, there's someone who you know who's going to want to enjoy it too. And it's going to give them, you know, analysis, context, POC perspective, and a lot of laughter and a lot of love.
All that stuff comes within the thick. And we read all your tweets. We read all your emails. We read all your reviews. You guys fuel us.
That's it for this special ITT end of the year episode. Happy New Year. Feliz Año Nuevo. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Dear listener, after this, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review this, because I tell you, it really helps. Also, you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and Lita Hallowell. Our audio engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. We'll see you on our next episode. Thank you so much for listening, my dear listeners. Have a great one. Ciao.
See you next year.
Happy New Year.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.